MSDN Flash Podcast Show 18, Michael Ford discusses IronPython. This show was recorded on the 18th of December and is a companion show to the UK MSDN Flash newsletter. All the links can be found at bit.ly/MSDN podcast, but it's worth mentioning Michael's blog, which is voidspace.org.uk. Hope you enjoy it, and a very Merry Christmas to you all. Hello there, Michael. How are you doing today?
Hello. Great, thank you. Thank you for asking.
Marvellous. And I'm beginning to realise I always say this, but I'm working at home today. And I think you're working from home as well today.
Yeah, I recently changed jobs, became a freelance developer, and got a contract working for a firm in Germany where I'm mainly working from my home office, which is nice.
It's marvellous that we work in a profession where we can do strange things like work for a German company but spend most of our time sitting in our own house. It's lovely. I feel very fortunate.
I'm appreciating it.
My dad doesn't understand it for one moment because he was a shipbuilder, and he's convinced that you can't possibly work unless you're standing in a ship in the cold rain. Hitting things with a big hammer. So it is a bit different. So it's probably a good way to start is if you could just introduce yourself and say a bit about how you started getting involved in Python as well.
My name is Michael Ford. I've been developing with Python since 2002. But I first started developing with IronPython, and this was my first introduction to the .NET framework, was in 2006 when I started working with a firm called Resolver Systems, who were developing a spreadsheet application, a very innovative, highly programmable spreadsheet called Resolver One, which is it's a great program. I recommend it to everyone. And they were using IronPython. And having worked mainly with Python, I was using Windows at the time, but Python's a very cross-platform language, so you don't tend to worry about the specific platform as much as you can help. And I thought, coming into this Microsoft world, the .NET world, you know, what am I letting myself in for? But was actually very pleasantly surprised by what I found. And IronPython was about version 0.7 at the time. It wasn't 1.0, but Resolver 1, the first release, came out about the same time as the first final release of IronPython. I do lots of other things. I'm involved in helping to organize PyCon and EuroPython, their big Python conferences. I'm one of the Python core developers, helping maintain the standard library, mainly the testing framework unit test. And I'm a Microsoft MVP for dynamic languages, have been for about a year and a half now, which is great. And I've written a book called IronPython in Action,
which is something that one of my colleagues swears by. So I think he's had correspondence with you before, Mark Bloodworth. He's our Python guy, as it were, in the team. To be honest, most of us are C# developers, but Mark took an interest in Python quite a while back. And I took a bit of an interest in Ruby, although I've not touched it for a few months now. So, but he's always bombarded me with Python sentences. And I must admit, I've never looked at it, but he has your book. He recommends it to anybody who'll listen to. So that book went well. It took a long time to write, no doubt.
It did. It took a lot longer than I expected, as it always does. It took 2 years, and part of that was because they kept having new releases, and things like Silverlight and IronPython 2 came out whilst I was writing the book. But it was great. I actually wrote it with a colleague here from Resolver called Christian Muirhead. He did two of the chapters. I did 13. I learned an enormous amount whilst writing the book, obviously, and I worked with Manning Publications, who are they're a
great company, aren't they? Yes. I have huge respect for anyone who can fit in writing a book while still doing the day job, because it just looks a massive.
I was actually commuting to London at the time,
See.
Which was a two-hour commute in each direction, and So that's one of the reasons it took quite so long.
So the two Python conferences that you mentioned, where are they happening and when are they happening?
Well, EuroPython this year, I think it's in July, but EuroPython 2010.eu is the website. That's happening in Birmingham. PyCon this year, which is us.pycon.org, that's happening in February in Atlanta. Better get this right. And that's going to be a great conference. I'm really looking forward to that. That's the international conference for Python. I'm going to be giving an IronPython tutorial at the start of the conference. There are several talks on IronPython and using Python with the .NET framework through the conference. lots of great people, great Python developers, and lots to learn about Python. So yeah, if you're interested at all in Python or IronPython, it's a community conference. It's not very expensive, and I really recommend it.
Do you know, I might even try and get along to Birmingham for Python. I might find some excuse to come along myself.
EuroPython is great fun, yes. And for UK developers, a bit easier to get to. I hope to rerun the IronPython tutorial there as well, and we'll have lots of community folk there, so there'll be some IronPython talks, I should think.
So you started by mentioning that Python is a language that's used on a variety of different operating systems. When I look at IronPython on the .NET platform running on Windows, I do come across a few developers using it, but I don't come across many. How vibrant is Python on either different distributions of Python or just different platforms?
Well, Python itself is very widely used. According to the TOB index, it's the seventh most popular language. I don't know how much store you put by TOB, probably not much, but it's just an indication of how widely used it is. And I mean, Python itself is older than C#. It first came out, the first release was 1991, so about the same time as Java. And one of the interesting things about Python is how many different things it gets used for. For example, it's become the standard embedded languages in GIS applications, geographical information systems, and in computer graphics systems, animation, ImageWorks, the Weta guys who did Lord of the Rings, all sorts of Blender and Maya both embed Python, ImageWorks and DreamWorks as well, all the major animation houses, they use Python a great deal. And the Sony ImageWorks, their whole rendering pipeline, although it's although the actual number crunching is done in C++, I believe, their whole rendering pipeline is all written in Python. And you'll often find that's one of the use cases of Python, where it's a great glue language. It's very easy to interact with C, C++, and embedded systems. And so you'll often, as it's a very high-level language, very easy to learn, very easy to write, you'll often find it as a glue language interacting with other systems.
I may have misremembered this one, but I'm a bit of an online gamer, and I seem to recall that Python's used for EVE Online as well.
That's right, and in fact, all their server stuff pretty much is written in Python. A particular version of Python called Stackless Python.
That's right, Stackless Python.
It's a custom builder Python, but it's generally available, and it makes minimal use of the C stack, so has certain advantages for concurrency.
So what would you not be tempted to use Python for?
Well, I find it a great language for application development, borne out by my time at Resolve One. I'm currently using it for web application development, using Django on the server side, deployed on Linux, but with the front end all written in IronPython in Silverlight. So it gets used for web development, it gets used for application development. What would I not use it for? Well, one of the nice things about both Python and IronPython is how easy it is to interact with what I would call lower level languages, where you really need where performance is key, and obviously for dynamic languages there's a trade off. You get the ease of development, you get the very expressive languages, they've got a very flexible type system, which often means your architecture is going to be simpler, but the trade off is that the performance is often not quite so good. There's a lot that could be said about that, but typically in C Python you can write code in C and use the Python C API to communicate with that, and in IronPython, using C#, interacting with C# is even easier. We don't really have to necessarily even use the IronPython hosting API, which you can do, and it's very straightforward. But you can write classes and code in C#, and then just use it natively from IronPython. So typically, the sorts of things where you might switch to another language is often where performance is really key.
Okay. Now, when you wrote the article for us for the MSD in Flash, the challenge was to write an article that might encourage a developer in the .NET world who's probably been using one programming language, be it C#, or VBE, .NET, for quite some time, probably hasn't looked at another programming language for a while, maybe JavaScript. But why right. they would look, why will, yeah. I keep forgetting everyone has to learn JavaScript.
Yeah, everyone uses JavaScript.
Everyone's at least two programming languages these days. But the challenge was to write an article that give people, you know, real reasons to go and learn another language, or at least look at learning another language. And you wrote a great article. And you started by talking about different programming styles and how it was supported by Python. So maybe that's a good place to start, by going through those different styles and how Python fits.
Okay, well, the different programming styles that I picked up on were interactive, scripting, procedural, functional, object-oriented, and metaprogramming, which are all different ways of programming, probably all familiar to your audience, except perhaps interactive, which is something that dynamic languages in particular are very good at, and .NET programmers may have used in the form of PowerShell, in that both Python and IronPython come with an interactive interpreter. You just run them, you run them at the command line, and you get an interpreter prompt that you can just type code into, and it's evaluated immediately, and you can see the results. And this, of course, goes back all the way to the days of Lisp and the REPL, the read eval print loop, as it still gets called.
And I do miss the REPL. I mean, one of the things I find is a struggle, because I consider myself a part-time programmer these days, which means that, thank God for IntelliSense, so that's helpful. But actually what I miss most would be a REPL. You know, I'd love to sit there and see C# and VB and just, you know, just bang away a little bit of code and just...
One of the great things about IronPython, and one of the reasons why I think it's attractive to C# and VB.NET developers, is Python at its heart is an imperative programming language, where the syntax and the concepts, although there are a lot of differences, there's a lot that's very similar about C# and Python, about the way it does things. So like, particularly the core object model, if you're coming from C# and you're starting to use IronPython, a lot of the concepts are really identical. And at the interactive interpreter, the things that I know several .NET developers use it for is you can add references to new assemblies. You can then you import the classes, and then you can create instances, you can interact with them, you can call methods, you can write functions, you can subclass and create new classes, you can do all the sort of things that you might do in a program, but you can do them interactively to experiment with. And there are actually quite a few Python developers who use this. I mean, I know one DBA in particular who the database administration is his main job, but he uses the Python interactive interpreter as his kind of his working command prompt, and he says he likes to pull data in, transform it, push it back out, and walk away. So you can use it as a serious tool in much the same way as you might use PowerShell, but it's great. It's a great way to explore stuff that you're is new to you. You just want to see, does this work, or maybe try out language features or whatever. And the interactive interpreter prompt is a great friend on that score.
The best equivalent I can think of when you're dealing with C# is to use LinkPad. So the LinkPad tool is great, because it just lets you write in an expression or a few lines of code or maybe a whole program, but you don't have that sense of compiling. You know, it's just doing some magic for you that allows you to run it. And that's the nearest I get. So I spin up LinkPad, write a little bit of code in there. Great little tool for that. So that whole interactivity is great, and I can see that's a strong reason to kind of look at Python. The next one you brought out was scripting.
Yeah, I mean, Python programmers, when people refer to Python as a scripting language, they're apt to get perhaps a little bit narked, because it kind of implies that all Python is good for is simple scripting tasks. And it's not really, you know, a man's programming language or a proper programming language, which is not true. I mean, I've used it for application development with code bases of, you know, over 100,000 lines of code. So it's definitely a serious programming language. We should be very serious about it. But the fact is, it makes a damn good scripting language. And that sort of doing simple one-off tasks. I mean, you can write programs that will... iterate through your temp folder, clearing out everything older than 7 days. You can do that in a handful of lines of code. And one of the things that enables you to do that is that there's no need to write a full object-oriented application if all you're doing is writing a simple script. If you want to do something that iterates through the files in a directory, you do that in a few lines, And you can write, Python has first class functions, and they don't need to be defined inside the scope of a class. So you can use a procedural programming style very simply. You can write scripts that don't even define functions if you want. It makes a great tool for simple scripting. And for automating things like XML processing or build tasks, that's often how Python first gets into companies. They start using it as a scripting language, and then find that it kind of creeps into other things as well.
Yes, and you called it out, and you see this in Ruby as well, being used for lightweight DSLs and stuff like that.
I mean that's particularly good where you embed Python or embed IronPython in an application, because you want to expose scripting capability to your users. I mean, that's one of the core use cases of IronPython, and the hosting API has been designed with that in mind right from the start. So embedding IronPython and hosting the Python engine and then interacting with that from a C# or a VB.NET application is very easy. And of course, there are very good examples of that in IronPython in action. But then having done that, you can then create custom DSLs using the dynamic, really the more dynamic features of the language, the ability to sort of customize attribute access and hook into the language at all sorts of points. And so that you can create simple DSLs that are very easy for your users to use to provide business rules that can be modified at runtime without recompiling your language, where new ones can be added dynamically. You can even store your business rules as text in a database, or whatever. These are all use cases for both Python and IronPython. In fact, there's a fun story from the guys who wrote Civilization 4. They embed C Python, and their original intention was to use a scripting to allow the users to script Civilization with Python. And they, in the process of doing that, they discovered they enjoyed working with Python so much that huge chunks of the program ended up being written in Python, which they'd originally just envisaged as an engine to embed for user scripting.
Do you happen to know if any of the Microsoft teams have got plans to embed IronPython in as a scripting language? Because we seem to tend to settle on Visual Basic. I'm thinking of things like Workflow Foundation and stuff, you know, where we go, we have an embedded scripting language, and that embedded scripting language is Visual Basic, because it's slightly easier for a member of the business to read and write, but it's not really.
I don't think IronPython's about to replace VBA in Excel, which would be great. A lot of people, that's one of the reasons.
We could start a campaign to do it.
But, I know that there are various teams inside Microsoft who are using IronPython. I know the research team have released some tools built on IronPython. And one of the, there's an editor that, for one of the projects, what was it called? Maybe I'll remember as we go, but there's an editor for one of the recent .NET projects that came out that was written almost entirely in IronPython, and you can actually extend yourself in IronPython by writing plugins. So it is kind of creeping through Microsoft and being picked up by some of the teams, yeah.
Okay. So we mentioned two things so far. We talked about scripting. We've talked about the interactive nature of working with an interpreted language. What other reasons would you give? So if I'm a .NET developer and I'm sitting here going, yeah, but, you know, I'm C#, been doing C# for, you know, 5-10 years, why else should I look at it? Are there other ones that spring to mind?
Well, I mean, I've programmed in C#, and I quite like C#. As imperative object-oriented languages goes, it's definitely one of the better ones out there. But I still prefer to program in Python and IronPython when I'm in .NET. And I think this is one of the tensions between dynamic and static languages. And a lot of that is just down to personal taste. And someone who's really thinks in terms of statically typed languages, in terms of type systems, is going to find switching to a dynamic language certainly very different, because a lot of the way they think about programming in dynamic languages, you think very differently. And I think this is why there's such a lot of, you know, if you read through blogs and so on, there's such a lot of public tension between those who advocate statically typed languages and those who advocate dynamically typed languages. It's really because they both require a different way of thinking about programming. Well, I think the rest is obvious from that. But
I was going to say, one of the things that I just wonder whether you believe holds true as well, is I don't think a programmer's ready to kind of switch over to using a dynamic language until they've already grasped things like TDD. Because it just feels like, I'm not using it as any kind of insult, but if I take the average .NET programmer that I meet, they do lean on the compiler a lot to get stuff done.
Right, and the classic thing is the compiler is going to catch some errors for you. But the truth of it is it's only going to catch a certain proportion of your errors, and it's not going to catch things like errors in your logic. And I find that the type errors where I'm passing the wrong types through really are the minority of errors and really the easiest to catch. Typically just running your code, exercising a code path in any way, whether it's through an automated test or whether it's through just playing with your application, is going to catch that. And so really, if you're saying, well, my compiler does some of my testing for me, so I don't need to do testing, then really what you've got is you've got very poorly tested code.
Yes.
There's a good rule of thumb that if it's not tested, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
and it's true that with dynamically typed languages, the best way to develop is with a lot of testing. But then I think it's equally true to say that with statically typed languages,
we should be doing
the best way
well.
To develop is having testing in your workflow. I love test-driven development. I found it changed the way I think about testing. It's part of my design process, thinking through API design and structural design is using tests. I find the tests are great for refactoring, where you change a lot of code and you've got a good test suite that is going to tell you what you've broken as a result. But I know that there are developers in Python who don't do testing, and I think they're crazy. But I think they're only as crazy as the developers who use C# and testing. I mean, the classic use cases for Python, we've talked about interactive programming, we've talked about scripting, we've mentioned a bit about embedding, and I think that really is, particularly for .NET developers who are happy with C# or VB.NET, that embedding IronPython and providing user scripting or providing extensible applications, this is one area where IronPython gets them something that they're really not getting very easily from their existing tools. But for reasons to consider, perhaps looking at a different language with a view to, well, is this a good language for general development? I mean, here are some of the things that I've picked up on that I think makes Python a simpler, more flexible language. And I mean, first of all, you don't have to make your type declarations. You've got first class and higher order functions built in into the language. Generics, as elegant as they may be, are really a solution to the problem caused by the static type system. And where you have flexible, heterogeneous container types, you don't need to use generics until you're interacting with the framework that requires them. Instead of having compiler-enforced interfaces, we can use protocols and duck typing, which really can simplify your code a great deal, even in terms of reducing layers of architecture.
I was going to say, on the interfaces stuff, I agree completely on that. So just from the work I was doing in Ruby, I couldn't believe just how much less code I was putting down on the page to do what I would have traditionally done with a whole bunch of interfaces and a whole bunch of classes. And
then if you get deep into the languages like Ruby and Python and you start looking into the metaprogramming capabilities and where you're doing things like you're creating classes to interact with databases or with XML, you can use the metaprogramming capabilities to introspect your database, to introspect your XML, and generate the classes at runtime on the fly, typically very quickly, so that your code to actually interact with your database can really be reduced to a few lines utilizing an ORM, say, or something like that, which just says, go look at the database and give me classes representing the tables that I have there. And Python has a very good one called SQL Alchemy, which is amazing to use. And obviously, Ruby's got active record. So there are all sorts of things, particularly when you look at the more advanced language features, which hopefully you'll often use through a framework rather than necessarily using them directly. But, I mean, they can really help the programmer experience. But we've also got things like that, because your types and namespaces can be modified at runtime, they're much easier to test. Mocking is substantially easier because you don't have to fight the compiler and say, yes, this really is the right type.
Yes.
You've got easy introspection. If you've ever done a lot of reflection on .NET, introspecting Python types is dramatically easier.
Then we've got orders of magnitude. Let's go for many orders of magnitude easier.
And then there's the wonders of things like covariance, contravariance, casting, which are all complications of the type system and which you typically don't need to worry about at all with a dynamically typed language. So those are just some of the ways that dynamically typed languages are different from statically typed languages. And in my experience and the experience of many other developers, easier to develop with.
And I think I know the answer before I ask the question, but is there anything you miss from a statically compiled language, statically typed language?
Well, tool support is something that people often pick up on. And working with dynamically typed languages, it's nothing like as bad as some people imagine. I use a Python IDE called Wing, and it does a lot of type inferencing, so it infers the return types of your functions and methods, it infers the arguments. So you get type information, you get the signature of methods you're calling, you get IntelliSense. But because the type information isn't really known until runtime, it's not as good as Visual Studio. And I do admire Visual Studio. Once it's finally started up, the development experience is generally pretty good.
Yeah, it's interesting as well because I did some VB last calendar year, and I'd got quite impressed with obviously C Sharp inside of Visual Studio and the work you got from IntelliSense and all that. When you actually switched to VB, which completely missed me, was the fact that we did even more, and it was constantly in the background churning up my CPU cycles, but it was giving me a really rich development experience. So
it actually compiles in the background.
Yes, right.
So it'll tell you problems. You don't even have to wait for the compile cycle.
It kind of made C# look a little bit lame what it was doing in the designer. Yeah, I'd always thought that was really good. And suddenly now VB was presenting me with so much more stuff as I was typing, going, okay, yeah, this has actually saved me a lot of mistakes. So, yeah, tooling is the one that I hear people talk about when they're...
But I would like to emphasize that there are very good tools for working with Python. I mean, it's interesting that refactoring tools were actually first invented for Smalltalk. Another dynamic language.
True.
And
that's,
so it's the dynamic language environment that a lot of these tools come out of. So I have very good tools for Python. I'm certainly not complaining about the tools I have.
The Wing IDE that you mentioned, that works for both IronPython and other variations of Python?
It does. I actually worked with the Wing guys a bit to get the type inferencing for .NET working. So you run a script... When you first download Wing, you can run a script, generate the type information for the .NET framework, and then you get your normal Python type inferencing, but you've also got your IntelliSense for the .NET classes you're using, which is great.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. Got it. Yeah. Now that makes sense. Is Wing commercial or is it?
It is commercial software. It's not too expensive though. And it's a fantastic IDE. So a little bit of advertising for them there. But I mean, there are lots of different IDEs for Python. There's Komodo by ActiveState, and I think that might be free. I know a lot of developers who use Emacs and Vim, and having tried other IDEs, swear by them. And there are lots of extension scripts that you can get.
Yeah, I'll let you into a little secret. I have never come across a better development environment than Emacs. So it was 14 years ago I last used it. But we had such an amazing development environment. And although Visual Studio is great, I've never been as productive as I was with all of the extensions that we had for Emacs for when I was doing Unix C and C++ development. But we were gifted by having an amazing Lisp developer in the team who just extended Emacs in all sorts of ways. And it's interesting that many years on, I still look at Visual Studio and see masses of missing features that we had in Emacs a very long time ago.
There's nothing new under the sun.
No, there's not. You know, every release of Visual Studio, we talk about a new thing we've added to the IDE, and I think, oh, yeah, I used to use that in Emacs as well. So it's interesting how these things have been around for some time. You've done a great job on convincing me to go and use Python. I'm already convinced on dynamic languages, so...
Well, you're an easy target, then.
I'm an easy target. You know, I wish I had more reasons to go and use Ruby. Actually, I wish I had more reasons to program, but I wish I had more reasons to go use Ruby in my role than I have, and reality is I have very few reasons. But I'm completely converted to dynamic. I went down a Ruby route. Not sure whether I did the right choice now, looking back, because of the two, obviously, Iron Python's been at 1.0 for quite a while. And I
2.6 just came out within the last week or so.
2.6 on now. So we RTM'd Iron Python a long time ago. And we haven't, I must check this actually, but we still haven't RTM'd Iron Ruby, have we?
It's approaching 1.1.
It's approaching 0.9 something. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think part of the difficulty is that the Ruby object model is further away from the C sharp and the sort of the core .NET object model than Python is, which makes it a harder language to implement.
That's interesting. I'm wondering whether with the limited amount of time I've got, I might switch over.
I mean, Ruby's a great language. It's interesting that the core object models are quite different, but in fact, in practice, that doesn't make such a difference. What makes a lot more difference is the sort of small differences between Python and Ruby. So those on the Python camp sort of pick out on the small things in Ruby that they don't like, and those in the Ruby camp pick out the small things in Python they don't like. I think really they're quite similar languages, and they get used in quite similar ways. And I think particularly the recent publicity around Ruby and Ruby on Rails in particular has been very good for Python. You know, dynamic languages have been talked about again, they're popular again, and we've seen Python use rise steadily ever since Ruby on Rails came out. So I'm very grateful to the Ruby folk for all they've done in popularizing dynamic languages and popularizing Python.
That's very true. In fact, I've just checked and the Ruby's at 1.0 release candidate 1 at the moment for a download. So coming very soon. So fingers crossed, that'd be a nice Christmas present. I'll treat myself to that and a day's play. I think we've covered certainly everything in the article. I guess the bit I'd like to add is, what would be the best way to get started with Iron Python if you're a .NET developer? What would you suggest? Which IDE, you know, if I'm looking you in the eye and I say, which IDE, how do I get started? What would you suggest?
I'd suggest trying, I think Wing do a free version called Wing Personal, which is a good Python IDE. I'd recommend that. Or obviously, the very best way of getting started with Iron Python is buying and reading Iron Python in action.
Marvellous.
The first chapter will take you through playing with the interactive interpreter and interacting with the basic .NET features. There's a good Python tutorial, and then it goes through more advanced language features, testing, a little bit about metaprogramming and the sort of the dark corners of interacting with the .NET framework, and then things like embedding, working with WPF, working with Silverlight, even interacting with PowerShell. So there's my advert.
Yes, absolutely.
But the interactive interpreter is a very good place to start, though. Take maybe some of the assemblies that you're familiar with, the classes you're familiar with, get a feel for them through the interactive interpreter, and then write some scripts, write some simple applications, automate your build process, whatever, just to get started with Iron Python and see what you think.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much for that, Michael. Hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you very much. Great to speak to you.
No, it's good fun.